with the galactose theory, since bacteria can ferment away some of the lactose. To prove it, though, we need a randomized controlled trial to examine the effect of milk intake on mortality and fractures. As the accompanying editorial pointed out, we better figure this out soon, as milk consumption is on the rise around the world.
So there you have it. Even with all these ad campaigns they have, got milk and all that, what's essentially behind it is a lie. All the studies that I've seen, most of the studies I've seen, indicate problems with milk. They're implicated in diabetes, they're implicated in hardening of the arteries, because the calcium, if it's not associated with vitamin D and vitamin K2, gets deposited in the arteries. So there's lots of problems with milk. So I would stay, if you're an adult, and even if you're a kid, I would stay away from milk. Yeah, so now we're going to go back again to the music, and this time it's time to say goodbye by Catherine Jenkins, same singer. Okay.
Oh,
That was a great song from a great lady, Catherine Jenkins, Welsh soprano, singing. Time to say goodbye. All right, and it will soon be time to say goodbye from this program. We have another 10 minutes or so. And this this clip I'm going to play you is from Dr. Ted Brower, B-R-O-E-R, Brower. And he's going to, and the title of the talk is The 10 Foods Not to Eat. There's some very important information. I know he talks pretty fast, but listen carefully to this one.
Of Southern California, they did a study a few years ago, and they said that children who eat 3 hot dogs a week have 9 times, I'm slowing down,
yeah,
9 times the risk of leukemia versus children who do not. Now remember, the leading cause of death in children aged 14 and under, other than accidents, is cancer. The leading type of cancer is leukemia. And the University of Southern California says 3 hot dogs a week, 9 times the risk of leukemia. So friends, if you don't hear anything else I say, please feed your children right. We have tremendous resources available to you today which specifically deal with childhood nutrition. Sharon and I have 4 children. We've been married for 25 years, and we've been blessed to have super healthy children. But we make sure that we feed the kids the right food on an ongoing basis, because we realize our children's health is our responsibility. It's not their responsibility. You haven't. My 5-year-old doesn't jump in the car and go to the health food store or the junk food store and buy junk food and bring it home. If we bring good food home, they eat good food. We bring bad food home, they have to eat bad.
2 diet sodas, Cokes. All that is bad.
Yeah.
What's in them that is so bad?
The aspartame.
Aspartame.
Oh.
And it does what to the body?
It's been linked to brain tumors, brain cancer, seizures, headaches, optic nerve degradation. It causes
memory loss.
It causes depression. It messes up serotonin levels in the brain. It's unbelievably bad. I can't tell you how bad diet sodas are.
Then you talked about
margarine. Trans fats.
Right. Trans fats. Mm-hmm. Then you talk about shellfish.
That's right.
Which are bad. Then all the cookies and the
junk food. High fructose corn syrup. That's right.
And you covered
number 6 to stay away from is interesting, because it's almost in everything, is MSG, monosodium glutamate. When you look at a lot of, in fact, they had Senate meetings on this a few years ago trying to force the manufacturers to label it, because it contains a compound, monosodium glutamate, called glutamic acid. Glutamic acid in neurochemistry is called an excitotoxin. It overstimulates brain cells, gives you terrible headaches when you get food if you're allergic to MSG, and it kills your brain. It actually eats holes in your brain, glutamic acid.
Well, stay with that a second and explain that.
Monosodium glutamate is added as a flavor enhancer,
and it comes in chips.
So the government
Chinese food.
A lot of times you go to a Chinese restaurant, you need to ask them, do you use MSG in your food? And a lot of them have right on the door, no MSG used, because there's so many people get really bad headaches from it. If I just get a taste of it, I get a tremendous headache. Because remember, the MSG, the glutamic acid, is an excitotoxin. It eats holes in the brains of the laboratory animals it's tested
on. God.
See, so here's the problem that we run into. People say, well, we're not a laboratory animal. Well, that's true. But the problem is this. Excitotoxins damage neural tissue. We know that. Here's the problem with trying to do a double-blind clinical research study using human beings. You can never get it past the board to get it approved. There's no way we can try to intentionally eat holes in a human being's brain or cause brain cancer in somebody, because they won't approve it. They won't do that. And so that's why we have to use the animal studies when these products are so poisonous, they do this. And that's the importance of, you know, the animal studies and what they do. Number 7 is chlorine in the water supply. Chlorine and fluoride. Both chlorine and fluoride are deadly poisons. They use chlorine gas in World War I to kill people with. And when we were at Florida State and we were in organic chemistry, if we produced a chemical that released chlorine gas, we'd have to use a vented hood, they call a vacuum hood, because they didn't want the chlorine getting in the room, because you could die from it, one good whiff. And see, we put it in the water to kill bacteria, but we shouldn't put it into our bodies, because it kills our bodies too. The same thing with fluoride. Fluoride is a byproduct of aluminum production, and it's used as rat poison. So many people don't understand how important it is to maintain your health and to do the right kind of food. In many cases, you can determine the state of a person's health by looking in their medicine cabinet. You can find anti-cough medicines, decongestants, antacids, inhalers, tranquilizers, aspirin, sedatives, painkillers. We have over 30 million people taking the drug Prozac. You know, I told people 20, 25 years ago that Prozac caused children to commit suicide. And nobody believed me. And they thought I was crazy. I said, no, this stuff really messes up serotonin levels. So finally, a couple of years ago, the Food and Drug Administration forced the manufacturers to put a black box warning with the strongest warning they can have on there, stating it causes suicidal behavior in many patients and children. Now, how sad is that? And so here we have a drug that we can use omega-3 fats like cod liver oil, which is one of the best things you can take for moderate to mild forms of depression. It almost can cure everybody with that problem by taking one product. Omega-3 fats, which is old fashioned old natural cod liver oil, which we talked about yesterday. I can't mention that we only found one brand that works, but it works very, very well at that. And people don't understand how important it is to put the right nutrients in your brain, put the right nutrients in your body, and you feel and you look good every single day of your life.
Okay, that's the basis to the end of the show. You know, it's interesting. I remember distinctly when I was in medical practice, there are cases of Prozac and suicide and violent outbursts, killing birds and killing different animals came up, and they came every so often. They would go to the courts, and the judges would not allow this fact. They would cover it up to keep the status quo and to keep the drug companies in business, as it were. But eventually it did come out as the truth, you know, that always comes out eventually, but it was suppressed by the judges. That's not saying very much about the caliber of judges we have in the United States, where they would not win these cases. It was pretty obvious that these explosions of violence would happen. Most of our Columbine and other shootings, almost all of them in the schools, these people are on drugs, psychotropic drugs. And so we're really in a mess situation today. And a lot of it also is due to the drug manufacturers. They cover up stuff. They cover up things, bad effects of their drugs on people. So be warned, okay? Be warned. The less drugs you take, the better. I know sometimes you may have to take them for a short period of time, but you've seen today about how ineffective the drugs for antidepressant drugs and other psychotropic drugs, all right? So we've come to the end of the show, and I forgot to give you the phone number so you can ring in and discuss any medical problem you want to. So sorry about that. I'll make sure that that goes out the next time. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz on the 103.1 FM dial, and we have this program, Dr. Mike's Health and Welfare program, every Tuesday from 7 to 8, so come back again and learn more. The more you learn and the more you put into action, the more power you have. And if you want to stream it on your smartphone or your computer, you go to freakradio.org. Freakradio is all one word, .org. And when that page opens, you'll see the image of a radio tower, and you press the red button on the tower, and you're connected with the radio sound streaming. So that's a pretty simple procedure. And then if you want to go to the archive where a lot of these programs can be accessed, you go to Radio for All. The four is the letter, is the number four, radioforall.net. And when you go there, you go to the search engine, it's on the right margin of the page, and you put in the program you're interested. Right now I have three different programs that you can put in there. It used to be called Health and the Awakening of the Self. That's if you put that heading in, you'd get most of the programs. And then after a certain time, it was number 44, I don't know, it was about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I split the program into Dr. Mike's Health and Wellness, and the other program is The Awakening of the Self. So now you have three different headings that you can put in there and access the the different programs, all right? So thanks for listening, and it's good to be with you for this hour. I'm signing out now with some more music. Hopefully. Oh, my computer just crashed down. So now it's going to take a minute or two to bring... Oh, no, it got it back again. Let's see if I can find you some song, that some music that you might like. Let's see now. Andre Bocelli. Yeah, Besan Mucho. That'll be good. That's a pretty nice one. We'll see you maybe, hopefully, next week. I do have a program called Awakening of the Self. It's on Monday from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock, if you're interested in spiritual awakening.
Bésame mucho. Como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Bésame, bésame mucho. Que tengo miedo a perderte, perderte después. Bésame, bésame mucho, como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Bésame, bésame mucho. Tengo miedo a perderte, perderte después. Quiero tenerte muy cerca, mirarme en tus ojos, verte junto a mí. Pienso que tal vez mañana yo ya estaré lejos, muy lejos de ti. Bésame mucho, como si fuera esta noche la última vez. Bésame, bésame mucho. Tengo miedo a perderte, perderte después. Miedo a perderte, perderte después. Que tengo miedo a perderte, perderte después.
And coming up next, and slightly late, on Bathrobe Spears Broadside 6 to 8 show is, well, you'll have to wait and see. Stay tuned. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM. Coming your way.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of wars and sing me of breadlines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines.
That was the orchestral side of Sing Me a Song with Social Significance. Looks like we're losing a channel somewhere, but hopefully we'll get it back somewhere along the line. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. As I mentioned earlier, we do a show twice a week, me and whoever comes into the studio. And there's got lots of stuff coming up tonight that I'm not going to have time for. What I'm probably going to be doing is playing much of it on Sunday, and I'll probably get stuff stacking up around that, too. I'm bound for Berkeley after this show. I'm heading up there to keep an eye on, document, and who knows, maybe resist the police and the University of California's tree-slashing operations up there. They are planning to eliminate somewhere between, 22 and 77 trees. Some have estimated as much as half the trees in this, I guess it's a, is it a 3-acre block? I'm not sure. It's the People's Park, which is a user-developed park that the community has held on to for, almost 50 years, 46 years, more than that, almost 50 years, near the University of California that was originally claimed by the community back in the late 60s in the middle of the anti-war protests. I wish we had some anti-war protests these days. We have the same wars, the same nuclear weapons, the same lying politicians, and an increase in inequality of wealth, which we didn't even have then. In any case, I've been kind of following this, mentioning it on the air. The website indiebay.org/East Bay has an article by the Save People's Park Trees group, which talks about it. This week is spring break, they write. One day this week, workers from Hort Science will enter the park and remove trees. On March 5th of 2012, the Berkeley Peace and Justice Commission passed a resolution in favor of reinstating a community advisory board before any alterations to the park are made. This resolution was made after the UC destroyed trees and flattened berms on the west end of the park. On April 3rd of 2012, Berkeley City Council unanimously passed the resolution titled Ensuring Community Input into People's Park Improvements. A work plan released by the UC shows Hort Science lists 77 trees for removal. After initial public outcry, the UC is lowering that number to 29, which still has members of the public concerned. There is a conflict of interest when the company that gets the contract to determine the health of the trees in People's Park also gets the contract to remove the trees deemed to be unhealthy. No second opinion has been sought by the UC. The administration didn't even have their own arborists produce a report on the health of the trees. Hort Science's report does not include pictures of tree damage or disease to back up their claims that 77 trees are in such poor condition they must be removed. Hort Science counts 155 trees in total, including smaller trees maintained to stay small. They want to leave only 78 standing. Previous tree work in People's Park has been done by UC's own crew. Tree pruning and the removal of trees happens every year by the UC's crew. Every year there is a tree or two severely storm damaged or legitimately struggling with disease. This is the first time an assessment has been made that dozens of trees need to be removed. There is always some amount of controversy, but this work order is different due to the scope of the tree removal and also because of the hiring of an outside contractor. Hort Science is a contractor for golf courses, including Black Hawk Country Club, Danville, California, and the Presidio Golf Course, San Francisco, California. Hort Science has no previous experience in People's Park and has not reached out to community members. At the start of 2012, Robert Lalan of the Lalan Real Estate Group became UC Berkeley's Vice Chancellor of Real Estate. During his initial statements to press, Lalan said he had worked with members of the Berkeley community to discuss future development plans for People's Park. However, these statements were untrue. Lalan never reached out to anyone who had any background in volunteer work at People's Park. Lalan didn't reach out to residents in the park neighborhood. Lalan did not even reach out to the ASUC, the student government, or to CERC, the Environmental Resource Student Group on campus. Over a year has passed since Lalan started as Vice Chancellor of Real Estate, and still the public has been kept out of any discussions regarding People's Park. The UC is not showing commitment to the park's future by having it placed under the development of real estate, under the Department of Real Estate. There is a growing desire amongst the public for People's Park to be placed under the College of Natural Resources so it could get funding for agricultural programs. People's Park could be the park of the Berkeley Food Project, run by Natural Resources. The UC does not recognize the potential for People's Park as an urban farm. The UC views the park blankly as a piece of real estate. There are those in the public who would actually prefer that People's Park be taken away from the UC and become a city park. City government has its faults, but at least has a process for public input. How about that? Willard Park is a city park which is maintained through public process. Ohlone Park is a city park which has a public process for community gardening. People's Park could be another city park overseen by community organizing and city funding. And they may well be right. This is my addition to this story by the Save People's Park Trees on the the East Bay, Indy Bay website. I don't know about Ohlone Park or Willard Park up in Berkeley. Maybe they are properly run by the city, or at least better than People's Park is by the UC Berkeley. The taking out trees in People's Park will be the third major tree removal project on UC Berkeley property in the past year, not counting continuous tree removal in the hills in the area by the lab. A grove of redwoods was cut down on the northeast end of campus last year. UC Berkeley put out a statement claiming the trees were sick. The UC misled the public about the health of the redwoods. The trees were healthy. The UC also misled the public about the age of the trees, claiming they were younger than they were. This year, a little under 60 trees of various species were cut down at the area of the Gill Tract. Not sure what that is. The UC understated the age of the trees and claimed the trees were all diseased. Now the UC is claiming dozens of trees in People's Park are diseased, when no previous assessment suggested that. Today, and this is written on Monday the 23rd of March, no trees were damaged. The rain may have kept workers away, or the tree cutting may not have been scheduled for today at all. There is no rain predicted for the remainder of the week. All that is known is that UC will move in on People's Park in the morning at 6 a.m. on whatever day that they show up. Both the Berkeley police and the UC Berkeley police are expected to clear out People's Park for the arborists. The stage is also rumored, that's a large platform area in the edge, well, it's actually in the middle of People's Park, but it's toward Telegraph Avenue, is rumored to be removed at a time when community members are actually raising money to renovate it. And the stage is something that's used where not only for events, but every weekday, or maybe it's three times a week, the group Food Not Bombs in Berkeley serves food there. That's an East Bay Food Not Bombs, not our Santa Cruz Food Not Bombs. And Food Not Bombs activists Keith McHenry, Abby Samuels, and I think Kim Margula are headed north, even as I speak, to ultimately check in on People's Park and see what's going on up there, as some of us are going to be going later tonight. If you're interested in this and you want to join a caravan, give a call to the station, and maybe we can make arrangements to pop you into the car. We don't have a lot of room, but it's possible. 427-3772 is the number here in the station, 427-3772. Or if you have any comments on the issue. I'm not a big arborist myself. I like trees. I really do. But I've never been particularly knowledgeable about trees, nor have they been a major focus of what I do and of what I write about and what I talk about on the air. But People's Park is an area that has been a refuge to some extent for homeless people, though police harass them there like everywhere else. And the attack on People's Park, I regard, or any parks for that matter, in Santa Cruz too, is a way of, I think, going after public spaces that poor people have traditionally tried to use as a sort of a relief valve, a sanctuary zone, a place where they could get away from the merchant-initiated harassment that happens in business in commercial communities or by Take Back Santa Cruz types in residential communities, some residential communities in Santa Cruz. Hence my interest in People's Park. I was arrested up there 20 years ago when the University of California attempted to kind of pave over the park and put in a bunch of sports courts. That was actually physically resisted by people and nonviolently resisted by others. I'm intending to go up there to document what goes on, and I can't say what's going to happen, but hopefully I'll be able to talk to you more about it on Sunday if and when I get back for my Sunday morning show, which runs from 9:30 to 1 in the afternoon. The stage, the writer continues in the story, at People's Park has been an object of contention for the UC. Since it was built by the community, people have been able to paint political slogans on it. If the UC made their own stage, they would claim painting anything on it would be vandalism. The current stage is a platform for free speech, and the UC wants to take it down. There's also been talk that the stage will be removed but not replaced because UC is considering putting a cafe in People's Park and the UC needs space available place for the placement of a building. People are encouraged to spend time in People's Park to form resistance. Don't assume it's too late to save the trees. And even if the trees cannot be saved through direct protest, then there will be a call for gardeners to replant trees and other vegetation in People's Park. If trees are cut down in People's Park, there will be a call for an environmental strike, a stoppage of work and school so people can spend time doing environmental and agricultural projects. Every day at 6 a.m. this week, and this was written on Monday, today's Thursday, people are needed in People's Park. This year is the People's Park's 46th anniversary. The UC is afraid of People's Park making it to its 50th anniversary this year. And this is a story, People's Park, and it's called Chancellor Dirks Will Remember It For You Wholesale by Save People's Park Trees. So, I also got an email from activist Carol Denny, who you heard, I interviewed her about a week ago on this station, which I liked the interview. And what she had to say about that was that she was pretty sure that their action was going to come down tomorrow morning. And again, it's not clear. And one of the aspects of this is that we're in the middle of the University of California spring break, which ends, I think, at least in Santa Cruz, the university resumes its activities on Monday. And I would presume it's the same in Berkeley, though I don't really know for sure. So I just wanted to kind of kick it off with that sort of encouragement for activism, direct activism, defensive activism in this case. And I'm also going to be talking about a few other things. I'm playing some interviews today for from the street, and often I guess it's going to be to some extent from the Red Church where I wandered in earlier. Red Church is a weekly meal, which most listeners hear me talk about every week, because that's where I go to get a lot of interviews and get some sense of what's going on the streets. I noticed there, and you'll probably hear me mentioning it in these interviews somewhere, that there is a lot of, there was quite a number of people there on Monday. It was just more than usual. I showed up late, and usually by that time, a number of people have already eaten and left, and this line was longer than I've ever seen it before. It snaked all the way around the room and back to where it started, nearly, not quite. And Father Joel Miller, who runs the meal and who does religious chat before the meal, estimated 150 people. And this is not even the last meal of the month, and it's the end of the month that people are mostly needy and that they have no checks coming in, no support, particularly disabled folks or elderly folks or families. Not many children there. There were a few, I noticed that. In any case, let's take a brief musical break and continue. And I'll remind you the call here is, call-in number here is 427-3772 in case you want to put in your 2 cents or give some updates yourself or make some announcements about upcoming events we should know about. I have probably more than I should to say about the Tuesday events at City Council involving the City Council's expected rubber stamping of the Bearcat attack tank or counterattack tank. But that's going to be coming up, and I'll talk about that when it does.
Try not to keep your spare change near the gear shift, or it'll break right through the wing to get a dime. Tear up everything you have to find a nickel. Leave all the doors unlocked, it saves you time. There's nothing left to take, but they don't know that, till they've taken every last hotel shampoo. The things I need behind the wheel, well, letters in the bag with all the shoes, you gotta keep your instrument beside you, no matter how it's always in the way, no matter how it always tracks the especially when you got nothing to say. It isn't like it's safer as you're walking, especially on these streets out late at night. But at least they know it matters like it's family. At least they know it never leaves your side, never leaves your side. I can hear. We probably had a laugh in better days. He probably knows this car better than I do, and more pissed off than I am that it stays. Stuck here till I got enough together to either make it back or move along. Find work now and then, but nothing steady. Couple days and all the money's gone. All the money is gone. People love to say I had it coming. You won't hear me argue. Are long since missing. I only changed the station with a plier. It just wouldn't be any point to fix it. I long stopped putting out the smaller fires. Concentrate on setting up tomorrow, making moves to get me back on track. Back up on a road that takes me somewhere and promises to never take me back, never take me back.
One from Carol Denny's album Unless, of Course, You Die. And the name of that song is Last Hotel Shampoo. Yeah. I guess it's about her instrument being taken from her car. Her aging car where you have to work the radio with a pair of pliers. Anyway. Don't know. So, welcome to Free Radio, and welcome to Bathrob Spears Broadsides yet again. I am going to reserve, unless I run out of other things to say and do, which rarely happens, the rather extensive tapes of the Santa Cruz City Council meeting on Tuesday for Sunday, when I will have more time to play them. I didn't record the speeches of the people because that's done mainly by the, well, that's done, although often with gaps and also with disruptions, so-called disruptions cut out by the city council staff. And you can find that online usually a few days to a few weeks after the city council meeting. And it's too late, it's not well done, and so forth, but it is there, and so I'm trying to give you stuff that isn't there. I did do a lot of interviewing outside. I wondered why I stayed so long at this council meeting. I've said before, and, you know, I know it needs to be underlined endlessly, that going back to city council again and again, even with a larger group of people, unless you are taking more action than shoehorning yourself into their 2 minute, then 1 minute speech periods and then leaving and hushing yourself and all your fellow people down so that you obey the decorum of city council even as they sell away the rights and the real security of the community into a new militarization and into a completely unaccountable, non-transparent process that is masquerading as a kind of a democratic process. If you don't do something other than simply follow their rules in the hopes that they're going to change their opinions, you're not likely to get anywhere. And that's what I've been telling activists this for a while. And it's particularly sad when you have such a large group of people together who can do much more. And I don't mean necessarily break windows, you know, I don't necessarily mean shoot down police officers, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about stop a machine that shouldn't have started in the first place. I'm talking about the city council's machine, which in essence is a rubber stamping machine for the police department. A special interest group in this case. Police officers, I was going to ask people, I didn't speak during the city council session. But if I had, and if I'd gotten it together, I would have asked the community, when's the last time a police officer came to your aid to help you with something, really? For poor people, it's usually the opposite in Santa Cruz. They usually come to harass you or deprive you of certain civil rights or chide you or put you in some form of intimidation. You know, however bluff the smile and however friendly the veneer, the laws that they are enforcing and the mindset that they have is that way. They're gentrifying the community. They're agents of the merchants and agents of people of property and agents of a system of law that criminalizes poor people. And it's just, for those who don't want to recognize that and pretend it's some that great new thing with the arrival of the Bearcat, that's preposterous. It's not that the Bearcat isn't a good symbol. The Bearcat, for those who don't know, is this armored vehicle that the police department snuck through the city council. Questions never significantly responded to by council. Although I got to say, I did not listen to I don't know how long the preliminary presentation by the police department was. I heard a little of it. Mostly when I listened to it later, part of the city council meeting I listened to was the city council public comment by mostly the opponents. I think the supporters spoke early on. The supporters in this situation got into city council early on and filled up a significant number of seats. That was the group. Some of them were from the group Take Back Santa Cruz. Some of them were from the group The Clean Team. Some of them were, I think, wives and families of police officers. But let's see what you folks have to say out there. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert. Hello? Hello? If you have a radio, turn it down so I can hear you. And if not, try calling again. I'm not sure why I'm not hearing you. Let me try another wave. Can you hear me? Yeah, I definitely recommend you try again if you're a caller. And in fact, if somebody else wants to try a sample call on the other line, there are two lines to call in on. One is 427-3772. One is 469-3119. And let's see if I can... hello, are you there? Yeah, but let me see if I can catch you on the board in a second. I'm talking to you, and the audience can't hear you yet. Say something there. Hello? Say something again if you can't. Wait, I see what the problem is. Now speak up.
Okay, hi, Uncle Robert. This is David.
I hear you. I hear you. Excellent.
Yes, I wanted to call to say... it's everybody, you know, this Bearcat thing.
Yeah.
Wake up, everybody. Wake up, wake up, wake up. My God. It's going to be the end of democracy and everything. I mean, wake up, people. That's all I had to say, Robert.
No, thank you, David.
Bye.
Yeah, that was the opinion of a number of people. I wanted to get some information from the other side, but they were hard to talk to, I have to admit. I think in the past I've gotten a couple supporters of the Bearcat on to talk about their support for it. I did do a little dialoguing on the Sentinel website with some of the supporters of the Bearcot, which quickly descended into personal attacks from them. I was asking the question, when has the Bearcat been used as a actual rescue vehicle in other cities? Because I really wanted to know. I wasn't making a rhetorical point. And I did get one response from that, and I'm going to try to find it because I think it's important we know the whole story and we speak the truth as we can find it, even if it doesn't agree with our preconceptions. And I'm looking over the Sentinel website even as I speak. Let's see if I can find it again. Maybe a little difficult. The main point is, for me, is again, as I've said repeatedly on the show, is militarization is a function, it takes many different forms, and it's very nice to have a symbol like the Bearcat. And as you can hear from the last caller, it's a very potent symbol. But the reality is, what's the day-to-day practices of the police department? What's happening to the laws in terms of who makes rules regarding public spaces? How many police actually show up at an incident involving a poor person, involving something that doesn't harm anybody but violates one of, let's say, the downtown decorum rules, like sitting next to a building or sleeping at night? Does there seem to be a form of class and racial profiling where a particular class of person or race of person gets disproportionate number of citations? And these are really important issues because they're much more day-to-day and prevalent and abusive than the potential presence of a Bearcat, at least to me. And these issues, although they were kind of obliquely referred to by some activists, like Sinbaris activists and some Huff activists, Food Not Bombs activists, at December 9th, when Food Not Bombs led the charge against the Bearcat and got a huge number of people there, not necessarily more people than showed up on Tuesday, but people for very short notice and for not having a large established set of liberal organizations, as SCRAM was, the organization, the Santa Cruzans Resistance against Militarism, the group that banned my group, Huff, from its literature, or removed us from its literature. But the original stuff was done by activists from Food Not Bombs, Abby Samuels and Keith McHenry, who put out the call. And then this sort of was taken over, it felt like to me, I don't necessarily know, not everyone agrees with me, by decorum-sensitive liberals who somehow felt that by simply continuing to meet with powerful political leaders, whether it's Sam Farr or Don Lane, or who isn't really that powerful political leader, trying to meet with members of the city council and chat with them, they would get a reasonable hearing and writing letters and so forth. This would have some major, and going to city council meetings and making two-minute speeches, that would work. Of course, it didn't. It won't. It wouldn't. And it's deceptive to suggest to people that it does, and it will. And that's what upsets me. I mean, you certainly should try it initially. I mean, you know, although if you've seen the city council's approach on past issues of this sort and how it really treats its police department, it's like going into Ferguson and expecting to be treated properly if you have the wrong skin color or you're of the wrong class. I mean, you can say, well, let's try a good faith effort here. Yeah, but you have to look at what the past process has been, and you have to act on the basis of that understanding. And if you don't, then something else is operating here. You know, I mean, I saw a lot of people. There was a protest before the city council meeting. It started at 6 on Tuesday, and the actual meeting was at 7. And the protest, you know, was led off by activist Sherry Connable, who did a lot of organizing around this issue. I'm told that Sherry is very concerned with decorum. She was urging Keith McHenry not to raise his voice, and if the vote went against, as everybody knew it would, and actually that a lot of this, I start to sputter when I talk about this issue. Anyway, the previous protest before the actual city meeting, which had people talking in front of the council in the council garden area, the courtyard area. It had different organizational people stood up and announced who they were and gave the name of their organizations and essentially repeated something we'd heard before. The same facts that the city council had allowed the police department to push this through, that there was a phony deadline that didn't really exist in December, that they needed to turn it back, that Santa Cruz didn't want this barricade. I mean, all these issues, that, you know, they're true. But when you said them 10 or 20 times in numerous forums, and you know the other side isn't listening, it's kind of strange to keep saying them again unless, I don't know, you're using that kind of discussion for other purposes, such as to bolster the reputation of your organization. And that isn't necessarily a bad thing if your organization is doing something around these issues. And it isn't a bad thing for people to come together around this barricade issue, for sure. And I got to admit, my viewpoint is somewhat hardened by my feelings about how this group treated our organization, HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and suspicions that it's not just about personal animosity towards, let's say, me, which is what everyone was telling me who went to this essentially closed secret meeting at which HUF was removed from the list of sponsors. It's all about you, Robert. You burned your bridges. You twisted people's words. You've talked inappropriately. You know, you've been a bad boy. So what do you expect? I expect due process. I expect the people in HUF to be respected. I expect the organization that actually initially got the public records, who arranged interviews on the radio for the main people, who've been repeatedly ahead of the curve on not just the barricade issue, but on these other issues. I don't know how much ahead of the curve we were on the barricade issue, but on the issues around militarization of the police, we've been holding repeated rallies in front of the police station, you know, on what we call Cop Corner. So the issue, you know, is where do we go from here? And that's really the issue rather than a lot of recrimination. And the only value of, you know, dissecting all this stuff is to make sure we don't see the same thing again. And that's something I'm going to be talking about at greater length on Sunday. I'm also interested in getting the account of Keith McHenry about this issue. And I don't know if we're going to be able to catch him because I think he is up in, on his way to Berkeley. Yes, that's what I understand where he was headed. But he did say he wanted to talk about this issue. So I'm going to try calling him and see if we can actually catch him on the air. And maybe we will. Maybe we can. And let's see if we can get him. We're giving him a ring. Keith, of course, was helping with many other Food Not Bombs volunteers to serve food. The food table was pushed far back from its place right next to the city council chambers, almost to the sidewalk next to the library. And I'm hoping we can... Hello.
Hi. Yes.
Keith McHenry, you are on free radio. Or can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
I've been talking about the Tuesday City Council meeting. You've got some time to give us some of your thoughts on how things went down there.
Yeah, yeah. There's three of us here. We can pass the phone around and let
sure.
people
okay.
know what's up.
So who have you got there?
So we have Abby Samuel. She's the
Abby.
I'm a gold person of the revolution.
Okie doke.
Yeah, we have Kim. Yeah, Kim Argula. She's the other Gamma Gold person of the revolution. So we've got these radicals here.
Okay, I know. I saw Kim. You were at the table through the lonely part of the evening, staffing the food serving when everybody else was inside. And Abby, I know you were running around doing all kinds of things, trying to hold things together, and so were you, Keith. But what? Who wants to start as to?
Who wants to start the radio interview here on Free Radio Santa Cruz?
It's Robert.
Yeah, it's Robert Norris calling in.
Robert.
Can't hear actually anybody except you, Keith.
Okay, well. She's just wondering what kind of radical woman she is. But I'll answer your other question first, and then we can discuss that in a bit.
Okay. Well, Keith, you know, The first thing I noticed was, I mean, I haven't talked about this yet, and one thing was the fact that there was a, can you still hear me, by the way?
Yeah, one second. Abby wants to go on. Just a second.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, Abby. How you doing?
Okay. I just thought I'd let you know on radio that, again, you did it so kindly, misquoted, misunderstood, misrepresented the whole, the piece that you wrote. I liked a lot of what you said on your piece. I did read it as your little scram thing on Santa Cruz resistance against militarization, and I liked some of what you said, and I agreed with some of what you said.
Abby, let me interrupt you just a moment, because I wrote that piece actually before the meeting, and I'm happy to talk to you about it, but I wonder if we could talk first about what actually went on at the meeting and what your reactions were to that. I haven't really talked about what I wrote on the air, at least not this evening, so people aren't really familiar with that, at least newcomers who are listening. But I'd be happy to talk about it. I'm thinking that right now, if we can, I'd like for you to give your impression as to a description of how things went down on Tuesday night and what your feelings were about it.
Well, we knew what was going to happen before we got there. We knew that they were going to vote that way. We've met with every city council, and they told us what they were going to do, and we couldn't convince them otherwise. And we weren't hobnobbing, trying to be famous. We were just trying to see another side of the story when we met with the city council. And so we knew that they were going to vote for the Bearcat, and there would only be one person. And we knew Don Lane would be bringing it up, would be seconding the motion for the Bearcat to only vote it down. So we weren't, there was no surprises there. I am not happy that they did not put it in the Civic, the entire thing. I thought it was a mess. I had three seats next to me that were empty. I don't think that was a very good way of doing it at all. I think they should have had the entire thing in the Civic. What else could I say? The end result, like I said, was not a surprise. There was not one group. They had five groups up there representing against the Bearcat. One group of, I think, five wives of the Santa Cruz police that were for the Bearcat. And I can't, you know, it's really unbelievable that no one listened to the public. You know, there was more people there that were against it than for it, not just there, but throughout the papers, through everyone we talked at. So I'm hoping that the people won't vote for the city council because the next election, that they'll realize that they didn't listen to the people. So that's one hope. And the other hope is that the police, I think Scram did a good job in getting the word out to the people and, you know, making it known that we weren't going to put up with this, and it'll be a lot more difficult to militarize the police in Santa Cruz. It'll be more difficult even, you know, with having the Bearcat, unless we can still stop the Bearcat. So that's my impression. I thought Don Lane was very fair on one situation where he let all the groups speak that wanted to speak, and I think there were five groups, and he didn't put the wives at the very end to end it. He put them in the middle, so we had a strong, you know, that we stood strong. He didn't try to weaken it. I thought the police presentation, a lot of it was bullshit, where they put the, showed the Bearcat and compared it to an MRAP. We never said it was going to be an MRAP. The military vehicle could be a military vehicle without an MRAP. So that was completely unfair. They said it was free. It's not free. Our federal tax dollars pay for it. It comes out of our pockets. So those are the things that I can say. I think that covers all my thoughts.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. And what about Kim and Keith? Do they have anything to add to this?
Yeah, I'll hand you over to Keith so he can tell you.
And Abby,
what
if
his
you,
thoughts are.
Before you go, if you want to, you know, if you want to discuss further, you know, your criticisms and concerns about stuff I wrote previously, be happy to do it. But probably we should do that on Sunday or something. You know, where we actually both, you know, I can let people know what it is, and they can say, oh yeah, you're right, you're right, and he's wrong, and so forth.
Sure.
Yeah.
That sounds fair. Okay. Thanks, Robert. Here's Keith.
Thanks, Abby.
Hello.
Mr. McHenry, Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, both of you Food Not, all three of you of Food Not Bombs, actually.
Yeah, we're a Food Not Bombs trip, and we're going to go to People's Park. We hear there's going to be some potential problems at People's Park, because I guess it's spring break is what I read in this article, and they might remove the stage. The stage is actually was made by the people. Years ago, I think almost 25 years ago, is when the current version of the stage was built.
I've talked a little bit about that, and that is important because that's what's coming up. I'm headed up there too after the show, but since we're running through the the Monday morning quarterbacking about the city council meeting on Tuesday around the Bearcat. The name of that vehicle, I can never remember it. The armored counterattack tank or whatever heck.
It
sounds much more impressive when you give the full name. I talked to you about this at some length before the show, I was outside and I was noticing things. Like, they had an unusual system where not only were people given little numbers that allowed them to file into the chamber, then they have to leave because the claim was there were too many people, and for some inexplicable reason, I never got a clear answer to this, Don Lane, the mayor, decided not to hold it in the Civic Auditorium that would have allowed the public to see the relative different sizes of the opposition and the support for this Bearcat. And it was my impression there were far more people showing up in opposition to it than in support, although why should supporters bother if they've already got a done deal, you know? For that matter, why should opponents bother if they're going to do the same thing again and not do something else, was my original point. But, you know, the opponents did gather. What was your reaction to that initially, the idea that this... Did you hear any promises from Mayor Lane, who insisted to me in an email he'd made no commitments to put it in the Civic Auditorium? Where did we get the idea that that was being planned? It was delayed, of course, since it was initially raised on December 9th, and then it got kicked down to the second meeting in March. I thought one of the reasons for that was they wanted to set it up in a larger venue and blah, blah, blah. What's your sense of that?
I think the public, people that were following this issue, assumed that it would be in the Civic Auditorium because that's what had happened with several other hot-button issues like this. So there was kind of an assumption. It's not like that anybody promised that it would be. I'm not so sure Don Lane actually had a lot to do with the actual decision from what I could hear transpiring outside. Deputy city manager took a lot of credit publicly outside for having been part of the architecture of this idea. And he was, you know, very adamant about that, that he kept saying that he felt insulted that people were objecting to this. He was personally offended because he had spent so much time figuring out how to do this, and that his team had come up with this idea and thought it was really good. And he was really vicious towards me. He was, you know, and I was just in the area listening to him talk to disgruntled citizens about why was it, you know, quite a number of people came up and complained that it's always in the Civic Auditorium, what's up with this, this is terrible, what's going on. And he was, it was kind of shocking.
What was his rationale? Why did he say that it wasn't? I mean, what happened, of course, those who don't know, is that people were told to go sit in the Civic and watch it on a TV screen, given little tickets, and said, come on over when your number is called, and then leave politely after you've made your speech, but not be able to actually you know, enter the room and be a part of the city council meeting, except at that one point, if you want to wait for 2 hours, when your speech is given. Why wasn't, according to, you're talking about Scott Collins, right? That's the individual.
Yes. Scott Collins.
Scott Collins, by the way, he's not the deputy city manager. He is, he's assistant to the deputy city manager. City manager is Martine Bernal. The assistant city manager is Tina Schul, I believe. Or
okay,
sure.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But in any case,
well,
what did he say? What did you overhear?
Okay.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, he kept saying that there would be no way to broadcast from the Civic Auditorium, and that was much more important to broadcast it from the Civic Auditorium and so on. But I have to say there's in this whole evening the thing that. I kind of have post-traumatic stress disorder because there was one aspect after another that I'd seen repeatedly done in San Francisco during the 10 years of Food on Bombs struggling with the right to share free food there. And it was interesting because it was so similar and like a playbook. Like somehow this is somebody coached people, or they attended a conference on how to do this, or something, because there was one pattern after another that was exactly as what I'd seen in San Francisco, or very similar. They were like Santa Cruz version of it.
What are you referring to? I'm not quite sure I understand.
Okay, so for instance, when we had public hearings with the Recreation and Parks Department
in San Francisco.
In San Francisco, they would do, or at my, there's a case where I had a civil contempt case and so on, and they would, they would do the very, very long-winded, the pattern reading that try to bore everyone so that they believe pattern, where you get so many people, thoughts and stuff going on and on and on about stuff. So that wearing the people down, then having it divided into two places, that was done. So, maybe just happenstance that there was a high percentage of supporters of the Bearcat in the audience, but that, just an example in the first public hearing in San Francisco, and this pattern occurred, repeatedly, but, and this is much worse in San Francisco. I mean, they played much worse hardball in San Francisco than they did in Santa Cruz. But they actually took all the numbers to the Coal Valley Improvement Association's regular monthly meeting and gave out the first 40 numbers to them like a week before the event.
And
they didn't really do that here, but there was this kind of...
Let me interrupt you, Keith, because what we understand, people don't know, the Coal Valley Improvement Association was a group that was trying to stop Food Not Bombs from feeding people in the Haight-Ashbury in about 1988 and 89, and you were trying to get permits through the Park and Rec Department, and actually at one point you did, and then they eliminated the process. But in order to get in there, you needed to, you wanted to go to some of their commission meetings. I think the House Un-American Activities Committee did the same thing in San Francisco in 1960 when they came to town and held meetings in San Francisco. They gave out special tickets to favored guests.
They didn't do that here. But there was this, there was this atmosphere where it was, we were definitely, as far as the logistics of getting into the city council meeting, we were really not. We didn't do that very well.
Now, when you attempted to get...
We should have had the first... I know. Yeah, well, Abby was trying to get people to go there and do that, but, it didn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, I know. I noticed. Let me clarify again what I saw, which is that initially, and I was there pretty early because I was there when the oral communications period, even before the oral communications period, the evening Bearcat hearing actually kind of almost bumped up against the afternoon hearing almost. The afternoon hearing was hearing about homeless issues and so forth, and then went into oral communications, the open period. But when I came out of the last item on the afternoon agenda, they had already set up these, I don't know how you describe them. They're sort of roped off areas. The entire square was roped off, and that's normally transited by the public facing the library. And they changed that later and roped off a smaller square next to the actual city council itself, where Food Not Bombs and Huff have often set up their tables. Instead, there was a table by the city staff, who were including Scott Collins, as you mentioned, and then a couple of other employees of the city who were asking people to sign up and then go over to the Civic Auditorium and get, and sit there and wait for them to be called, for themselves to be called. And you've also talked to me about how you said the sound system over in the Civic you had heard from several people was not very good. You are the second person I've heard that from. I didn't hear it in great length, but I know there was, I guess you could kind of hear the sound outside the Santa Cruz City Council, although there were police officers guarding the doors. And I understand you ran afoul of some of those police officers when you noticed there were open seats available and tried to get in.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was told by an officer after being, like, you know, kind of roughed up by some people at the other side, you know, trying to talk to them. There was big guys that were pushing me around and yelling obscenities at me and stuff. So then an officer came to the door and he was letting people in. And I said, I'm going to be one of the early speakers, and my partner's got a seat for me. And he said, oh, yeah, you're a speaker, you go around to the other side. So I went to the other side, and a number of people were walking in, so I started to walk in with them, and an officer behind me shoved me into the two officers that were standing inside. And then those officers started pushing me, saying that I was assaulting them. And that was reminiscent. I've had that happen quite a number of times. That was not an unusual tactic. In fact, my last arrest in San Francisco was done exactly that way, back in July of 1997, actually. So,
do you remember the names of any of these officers who, either the one who you were saying shoved you or the other officers who then claimed that you were assaulting them?
No, I don't remember their names.
Were there any witnesses who supported you? And when did this happen? In the court? Was it in the middle of the meeting? Was it before the meeting happened?
Oh, it was before the meeting happened. I was just following some other, you know, citizens into the hall.
Well, I know.
And that's where the officer on the other side had sent me, and I was...
They seem to have this kind of worked out in a certain way, because I noticed at a certain point that there were vacant seats. It was about an hour and a half into the meeting. I looked through the windows. I saw vacant seats on the benches, and I tried to get in. I was stopped by two officers. You can't go in, you know. And I said, wait a minute, there are vacant seats. He said, no, it's filled to capacity. And I said, well, what's the capacity? And they said, 114. I think that's what he said. And I said, how come there's so many spaces? And he said, well, it's, you know, so I went, in order to be sure, I tried to count the number of spaces. I got no more than 80 or 90 people. But I was counting from outside, and I wasn't sure if I was doing an accurate count. So I went around to the other side of the building, and was able to attract the attention of John Malkin, an activist who's also a free radio broadcaster and also a journalist, who was inside and standing near the window, and I asked him to count the number of people in the building. He did, and he told me there were 70, more or less. And so I went back to the door of the side door where people were leaving, and some people were being let in, mostly staff people, I think, or police officers, and I said, there's only 70 people in there. I'd like to get in. He said, go around to the side door. Apparently what they told you, the other door, the door that faces the bathroom. So I went around to the other door, and there was nobody there. And so I went to Scott Collins, the fellow you mentioned who had been, you were telling me, saying he managed this whole thing and created this division of the Civic Auditorium and the city council so that people didn't, so the Civic Auditorium, for me, wouldn't have a large crowd, and people couldn't see what the actual real division of opinion was on this issue. That's, again, I don't know what his motivation was, but that was the effect. And he went in. I said, look, there's, you know, that somebody inside just counted 70 people. I want to, you know, be able to go in. This, if you're not going to let us in, you're violating the Brown Act, which insists that we have open access to public meetings. Come on. And so he went inside and said, no, no, the fire marshal has got a clicker and he's counting people, and there's, you know, they'll make an announcement when people can come in. I never heard an announcement made. Maybe some announcement was made somewhere. But it, you know, it didn't strike me as an accurate assessment of the number of people who were in the building. And this kind of process, you know, I've spoken sarcastically, and maybe Abby would be upset with me about this, about how coming to a meeting that you know is a done deal with only the attempt of sitting through it again with your hands in your lap is not the, you know, the best way to protest when you have a huge number of people who have been watching this meaningless process, and meaningful only in its slides the police department venue right through the police department agenda. It seems a really a misappropriation of, you know, a sort of a really lost opportunity. But, I mean, it's also important for the community that they have access even to these token city council meetings. And that's at one point I wanted to have I pressed the Scott Collins to bring the agenda book outside so people could see it. First they said no, then they said yes, and then when Anna Brooks, the city clerk's assistant tried to announce everybody should move over to the Civic, meaning it seemed obvious to me she was trying to do crowd control and break up the crowd, and I then said, you know, you're advising people, Anna, that they don't have to go to the Civic, they can stay right here if they want. But that wasn't the way she was talking, although she clarified, oh no, of course they can stay if they want. But why would SCRAM and why would the organizations allow themselves to be divided in this way?
Well, there was, I mean, it's not so much that we were allowed. There was a lot of emailing Don and talking to Don and saying, we thought this was a very bad idea. There was even efforts to connect with the Community Access TV to see if they would be able to broadcast. From our point, you know, from our, you know, by people that are connected to them that work, you know, in support of SCRAM. So there wasn't like there was a letting of Don Lane to have this organized this way. This is just basically, yeah, we were against it. We thought it was a bad idea. And even though, you know, the, you know, what's his name again from the city manager's office?
Scott Collins.
I mean, I was kind of shocked at his abuse of the public out in front. It was kind of harsh.
Well, you know,
but he was. So we don't know if they really thought this out.
It's not so much, let me interrupt you, Keith. It's not what they're doing. It's what you and the activists, we are doing, I should say, all of us. I mean, SCRAM activists knew, as Abby was saying, what the predetermined result was likely to be. And they also knew that this closure of the Civic Auditorium was going to be happening so that the people couldn't, you know, attend the meeting in a direct way. So why, I mean, why would there not be some alternate plan for people to actually resist this in a more dramatic and clear way? That's the first thing. And the second thing is, when they then attempted to break you up in the middle of the, you know, as the meeting started, I know Abby was doing her best, as what I was heard, to try to make sure people didn't, you know, get corralled off in the Civic Auditorium unless that's really what they wanted to do. But it happened anyway. And I mean, and the reason I ask this is important because activists letting their protests be controlled by those they're protesting against is simply, particularly when they have a large crowd of people, is really, it shows you don't really have a protest group at all. You have somebody else who's sort of asking permission, and then if you don't get it, oh well. See, that's my concern.
Well, I think, I mean, I would actually, I mean, having seen how all this went down, I think we were probably could make a mistake in not starting to, yeah, we should have demanded it go to Civic Auditorium, even if it, at the very beginning of it, and just not cooperated with it. I could see that. We should have had a plan for that. We should have potentially, yeah, we did talk about it, but you know, I think, yeah, we did decide not to do it, but I do, you know, on seeing it, I think it was a mistake. There should have been we should have actually, you know, now and seeing how it went down, so there's we should have, like Morgan said, no, we're just not going to put up with this, and and so on. But I think that there were some in the group who somehow thought if you were nice to the, you know, like you were respectful, that it might help win the vote.
We all know that that, of course, most, I think...
Abby's pointing out that Micah and Don said focus on the content. We should have said, screw Micah and Don about that, and we are going to do this other thing. But there is another issue that, and this ultimately, you know, while that might have been a positive thing, I have to say, because I answer the spam phone, that I've been getting calls like crazy for, like, ever since Tuesday, from people that are real, that I don't even know. I don't even know if I've ever seen them, that are hopping mad about the whole way this thing went down beyond the actual vote. So I don't know. It might have, in some ways, undermined the credibility of even, I mean, people really are angry at Don Lane. I could not believe how many people who said they worked on his campaign and voted for him and worked so hard for him were so angry at what they witnessed in the whole event. So you're right. Maybe, I mean, we should have probably, you know, maybe it wasn't wise to let it be controlled by Don. We shouldn't have maybe listened to him.
I mean, I'm more concerned about the people in your organization that are controlling and moving things in a sort of a courteous direction.
Well, it's actually, though, there's no, you know, the meetings themselves, we really are dedicated to using the consensus process, there have been some logistical issues towards the end where not everybody is always at every meeting and stuff like that, but by and large it's been very, very creative. The actual use of the consensus process in these meetings has been overall very, very effective than I've seen a lot of other groups.
Well, that's nice. What kind of creative product has come out of this? Give me an example.
Well, I would say the largest, so there's a number of different things. First of all, it's very unusual to get both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party to actually vocally come out against the Bearcat or any kind of thing in unity. It's unusual to get a congressperson to actually publicly denounce the actions of city council. And it's also, when this all was happening, you know, when it first started on December 9th, they were like, Don Lane and the other city councilors were like, well, we're not even going to bring this up. It's a done deal. Just go away. So there's been when you consider that we're just random people trying to do this with no resources, and they have huge amounts of resources, and I don't mean just so much the city council, but the people like the Homeland Security, the entire system, LENCO itself, whoever.
Wait a minute. I didn't see any Homeland Security agents there. I didn't see any LEMCO people there, and I really think it's important.
No, but I think that you don't have to see them there. What was happening behind the scenes that we don't know about as far as pressure?
But it's people. It's people power, isn't it, Keith, that we're talking about? It's the power of the community to stand up, and that's charged with this issue because Food Not Bombs, because you and Abby and others did such good work in December and in January in raising the obvious issue that some of us, myself and John Malkin, got the public records. You know, we got you on the radio. You know, you had this great public hearing, you know, in the Loudoun Nelson Center. Having gotten all this, to let it subside into a series of two-minute okays, gee, we got the Republicans and the Democrats and Farr and Lane to say, you can have your token hearing, and we certainly don't agree with this. That has nothing to do with the outcome in a substantive way. I mean, come on, you know, let's get real here.
But the reality is, do you think that if we disrupted the meeting right from the beginning, if we took it over, if we... we didn't let it happen because it wasn't going to go to Civic Auditorium, you know, maybe that would have moved them to vote in our favor. And there was a bit of discussion that maybe disrupting it would have maybe not positive impacts on the vote, which it certainly wouldn't do, but in that conversation on what to do, I made a statement that maybe the larger issue of I pointed out that I'd watched a lot of videos of people disrupting police commission or city council meetings because of this kind of stuff, because of people being shot, things like that, and that there's this kind of momentum, and maybe if that's what came out of it, that would be, while it didn't have direct impact on the success of the vote in Santa Cruz, that it might have larger inspiration to the rest of the community.
I mean, I don't know if there's any might about it. You have Ferguson, people on the streets who essentially created the national movement because they continued to protest in the face of incredible potential abuse and violence. I mean, killing, I think you have people there who, you activists who, when you're on the post office steps and they tell you to move, you say, no, we're working on this, we're going to keep doing this. I don't know if it's a matter of, necessarily one specific disrupting strategy, but if you're taking advice from people whose primary focus is to convince a bunch of politicians to agree with you, and I believe that these people are at the center of your organization, then you're going to be, essentially, you're going to stop right there. And I guess what I know is that Food Not Bombs doesn't stop right there. At least that's been my historical experience. And also, Sinvaris.
No, but we're working in a coalition. We're trying to,
form another coalition.
Unfortunately, I have to go because I'm arriving at the destination.
All right. Well, listen, I think I'm going to see you folks later tonight in People's Park. You're going to be down there. We can continue the discussion at some point. I appreciate you taking the time, and I know you may be working in a coalition, but you can't let yourself be strung up by conservatives in the coalition. Or if you are, you say, okay, as a coalition member, I'll do this, but as a Food Not Bombs member, I can form my own coalition and do other things.
Yeah, I've got to get off because apparently I need to help over here. Okay,
alrighty,
take care. Bye-bye.
Take care, man. And I hope that all is well up there. So if you have any reactions to this dialogue, that's with activist Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs, Abby Samuels, also Food Not Bombs. Didn't get a chance to talk to Kim Margula. Got too wrapped up in the back and forth with Keith. Do give a call. The phone lines are open, 427-3772, if you want to jump on board and chat, and then you can do that. Also, I will provide Abby with an opportunity on Sunday, if she wants, to talk about what I wrote about this before it happened. I said, you're not going to get anywhere with this. I'll talk about that on Sunday. But really, the question is, where do you go now? And I've suggested that Food Not Bombs, Sinvaris, Huff, other groups form a coalition that works on moving further, going deeper, and yes, if necessary at certain points, if people decide to do it, perhaps disrupting the process at certain points in order to assure that the militarization doesn't go forward. And, I think almost all of us in this conversation are nonviolent, although we're talking about facing violence. And I've also talked about a diversity of tactics on this station, too, about how it's necessary to understand that sometimes force is necessary to address force, in the sense that it can be something that helps prevent a greater evil. And I've talked about this in things like when police officers are surrounding people and not letting them leave, and they're all going to be arrested and held for hours under ridiculous conditions, as police in large cities have done. If you break into a building in order to allow for an escape route for people to get away, that's called, in some instances, a necessity defense. So I don't know. I mean, I'm disheartened to hear this kind of conversation this way, but we'll see what happens next, and perhaps something will have me gain heart in the days ahead. The issues continue to remain. Huff has voted recently to pick up where it left off in front of the main library on Tuesday. For those of you who are interested, that's coming up. I guess it's today is the 26th.
27th, 28th, 29th, 30th, I think it's the 31st or April 1st, thereabouts, where we're going to be in front of the library. This is where homeless folks often gather in the mornings. And we're going to be taking accounts of abuse. We're going to be offering people an opportunity to file claims against the city. We're going to be trying to see who's gotten stay-away orders. That's the new extra-legal system, the police-do-what-they-want kind of system, where a police officer or ranger can give a stay-away order to anyone they want who gets any kind of infraction ticket on any kind of territory controlled by the Parks and Rec Department, which covers not just parks, but all kinds of other spaces in Santa Cruz, including Pacific Avenue, beachfront areas, and other areas you had no idea that they had jurisdiction over, but they don't usually show up at. The police officers are usually there. Stay-away orders are usually done by courts. Now they can be done by cops. This is just the sheerest example of the police state in action, with the glove taken off the iron fist. And I just got a Public Records Act request filled from the police department, which gave me the record of the citations they've issued under the stay-away order, or actually the actual stay-away citations, but it isn't clear how long these stay-away orders are for. So I'm going to have to go back and repeat my request. I've got to re-examine it, see if I ask specifically for that. I may not have, in which case I'm going to have to make it clearer in my second request. I'm interested in knowing if anyone has gotten a stay-away order from any place in Santa Cruz by a police officer or a ranger for more than a day. If that's the case, I want to hear about it. It could be the case that this new law that was passed in January and came into effect in February, which states that if you have 2, 3, 4, 5 infractions in anywhere in the city that's controlled by the parks, you can get escalating amounts of time on stay-away orders completely at the discretion of a police officer or ranger without any other criteria. There's nothing that says, other than the fact that they're giving you an infraction ticket, any other standard they use as to whether they'll give you an addition to this infraction, which makes you go to court and deal with it or face a heavy fine, a stay-away order from a piece of property that, you know, you may be accustomed to being at. It may be important for you to meet friends there. It may be a place, if you're a homeless person, involving things like survival, because you have a limited number of places you can be safely with a community of people, even on a property they're not supposed to be on, because there's no legal place for people in Santa Cruz to sleep at night. So I'd like to know if anybody's getting stay-away orders for more than a day. I know that a number of people, at least, there have been at least a dozen police stay-away orders, and the rangers have been much more prolific in their stay-away orders, and those tickets should be available soon at the city's city council offices, which is where they make us go to check them out because they don't bother to summarize them or to do the work that would let the city council know exactly what's happening. And I find it surprising because even though the city council, frankly, couldn't give a rat's ass what's happening to the majority of homeless people in this community other than pushing them further out of sight or threatening them to get them out of town. That's really my belief, generally, in spite of all the hand-wringing and Don Lane-ish-type statements. And it's not that people are lying about it. It's just you don't have a huge bakery and then say, it's really too bad people are starving, but, you know, the law prohibits me from giving away bread. You know, and then it's sort of, that's not what you do. And I guess we'll find out on Tuesday if people are at the library have any reports around that. And hopefully we'll have some more ongoing claims against the city, which we are still working on a process for taking to small claims court, which will mean hauling in these officers and rangers who are giving out these citations and making them justify what they're doing or face a claim of $2,500 for sleep deprivation. Let's hear some stuff from the Red Church. I was going to begin with that, and I let myself get sidetracked, so I apologize for that. And again, if you have any calls, 427-3772 is the call-in number. Call in if you'd like. I'll be on for another half hour.
They, yeah, well, they got noticed, but then they showed up.
They got noticed, but then they showed up in the morning
and said, we have to go, and they made them leave, and then they, I guess, came, they left because they were, like, forcing them to leave, and then they took everything. They took the tents, their blankets, everything.
So we're in front of the Red Church. It's about 6:15 on March 23rd, and getting a report from anonymous or from a person who wishes to say?
Anonymous.
And when did this seizure of stuff happen?
About 3 days ago.
And how many people were affected?
I probably see about, well, several different people all throughout the tracks, but eight people in particular that got kicked out of their camp because they were given notice. Some of them were given notice, others weren't. They kind of said, spread the word, but they came to waking up in the morning and finding the rangers there, telling them to get out, and they had to leave, or they were going to go to jail, and so they left, and when they came back, everything was gone.
Did the rangers give an opportunity to take their stuff with them?
No. They actually had to plead and beg for anything that they did get to take.
And what was lost or taken by the rangers?
Their tents, their blankets, their clothes, everything.
And what would you estimate is
their bicycles, actually. Their bicycles. Because that's something that my friend went back and begged for the bicycle back because she needed it. That was the only thing she had.
Did this affect you?
Yeah, because now I have to give everybody blankets.
And
Bicycles, again, something the police department has been, when they've seized them or confiscated them or found them, lost or whatever, they used to go to nonprofits via the bike church, but then the police department decided they didn't like the bike church and started funneling them to the bike dojo, a business with which a lot of us believe there was a conflict of interest because the mayor, then Mayor Hillary Bryant's spouse, has a connection with the bike dojo, and then they decided in order to avoid that embarrassment, they would simply throw them all back to the police department, and the police department would sell them at auction or dump them into a landfill somewhere and give a very small number of them to the teen center, which is acknowledged recently, apparently, according to Scott, to Steve Schnarr of the bike church, that they need the bike church's help in distributing the bikes. But very much fewer bikes are coming, as I understand it, back to the community. And you can read about this on Santa Cruz Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, if you want. Look up, search for bike or search for Norse. That's my last name, N-O-R-S-E. And you'll find one of the story about that. It's an ongoing scandal, and apparently it also seems to be a punitive action, politically motivated by the police department. And based upon a stereotype that giving bikes to poor people, you know, enables their, encourages them to have a more welcoming place here, or, encourages criminal activity like sleeping. I mean, you can bike to a place where you can fall asleep, you know, and then it's a crime, so you're helping the criminal. I don't know. I mean, I know that the most reasonable project was destroyed by the police. I know that Scott Collins, the individual who you heard Keith McHenry criticizing, who was running around last night or two nights ago, city council in a business suit. And it was helpful to me in a number of ways, in small ways. He, after he finally got the binder of the city council's agenda outside, after it was repeatedly requested, he went inside to determine and passed on the misinformation that the room was full up when it wasn't. He's got a nice manner. I mean, I like the guy personally. It's too bad. Let's hear some more, though, from the Red Church about this latest raid from about a week ago where eight people got kicked out of their camp. According to this person, some were given notice, some not, had to leave and leave their stuff behind or they would face jail. Or at least they had no time to pick up what they had. It's not entirely clear from this account, but, well, you be the judge.
And this was 3 days ago, so what did the folks do for the next two nights?
They froze, actually. We got a couple of them blankets, but I think like maybe three the first day, and then we got two more the next day, and I think there's still two that still need blankets.
Is anyone given a ticket or a citation?
No, they weren't, because they left. Like
they stole everybody's shit, but didn't give them any tickets.
Yep.
And we've been talking with the Notorious
Anonymous.
Thank you, Anonymous. Any other reports about what's been happening?
Yeah,
okay, no. Fair enough. We're talking with Father Joel.
Joel, I look here, of course, getting closer to the end of the month, we're a week away from it. The line goes all the way around the room, and I'm here 15 minutes after it started. You've gotten a lot of people today.
Yeah, it's a large crowd today. You can see what it is. I would guess there are going to be 150.
This is almost, is this usual for the end of the month?
End of the month it is, yeah. Last week, I thought there wasn't so many last week.
And early in the month, of course, there are considerably fewer.
Yes, that's right.
Now, what is the cost of a meal like this? How much does it cost to prepare? What is the cost of food? And, of course, you can't really estimate everything because of the rent and the heat and so forth. But what do you estimate?
Well, the budget for this is last year was $7,000. So, you know,
52 meals a year divided by $7,000.
Yeah.
A couple $100 a meal.
Yeah, 150, I think, something like that.
That's pretty...
We get food from Second Harvest. We get food from the Martha's Kitchen. And then we buy bagels and cream cheese and coffee. You know, actually, the cream cheese and the coffee is the biggest expense.
Are you getting much demand for blankets from people who report their blankets have been taken or lost?
No. The warming center collected a bunch of blankets and they dropped them here.
How long ago?
Was it December?
Right.
Yeah, maybe it was in January when they had their appeal for blankets.
Right.
So we have maybe 25 blankets, and we didn't even get rid of them. I think there's still 10 left.
So you've still got blankets here.
Yeah, right.
So if somebody needs a blanket, perhaps I should suggest that.
It's best to come, you know, like now, when we can get to them, then, you know, if they come at the time when the secretary won't always have time to go get them. I think that
So, not that it's very helpful, but if you do get to the Red Church for a meal and you are listening to this broadcast or hear about it through other people, Father Joel has said there are 10 blankets left at the Red Church. Get them while they're still available. I think the Red Church serves meals. Well, Father Joel Miller, you're listening to, does so once a week. There's another group that does so on Thursday afternoons at 4, I believe. So, yeah, if summer's coming on, so things are getting warmer, at least that's how it was today, but things can turn cold at night.
Fair enough. When we talked last week, I believe it was, or maybe 2 weeks ago, probably last week, you were telling me that there's a kind of a laissez-faire isn't the word, but if people behave themselves at night, often folks will crash outside the church.
Yeah, we had, I think, 30 for St. Patrick's Night. So, and that wasn't such a well-behaved group.
There you are. Where'd you go? I've been waiting for you.
What about last night? I'll be here.
You've been hiding?
No, I just got here.
Oh, but you left the car and just, like, went somewhere else?
The car's right now, over there. Let me get to this one.
Oh, okay. Excuse me.
No, it's okay.
Hi. How are you doing today?
So, brief interruption. What about last one?
I don't know. I have no idea how many. I just heard one person got a ticket for sleeping here because he didn't have a letter from me.
And on St. Patrick's Day, you didn't give out 30 letters.
No. I give letters to people I know keep the place clean.
Right.
And so they have to kind of prove themselves that they can do that.
But the police didn't give tickets. Maybe they just didn't come by that night, or...
I think they did, but I don't think they don't always give tickets. You know?
So it's very kind of a problematic. Depends on the feeling of the officer.
Yeah, the feeling of the officer. The officer is fairly, you know, he wants to negotiate rather than give a ticket, but he will give a ticket.
And then, what's there to negotiate? A person needs to go to sleep, and there's no legal place.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the person understands that it's trespassing unless you have permission, and you know, if they say, "I understand, officer," then that's negotiation, and they don't give them a ticket.
They understand and leave, or I understand, or he gave me permission, but he didn't give me a slip.
No, this person didn't have permission, and I'm going to give her a letter. But I think what probably happened, what usually happens if there's inebriation and drunkenness and carousing, then they come and they just give everybody tickets. And And then, and that's maybe what happened last night.
But you don't know for sure.
No.
Well, Joel, you're one of the few. Are you one of the few churches that do this, or have you heard other churches allow their property to be used without, you know, the specific letters and so forth? I've heard of other churches doing.
Well, I don't know if the, you know, our place is so, there's so many niches and places to sleep, you know, and places to have some seclusion and isolation.
Please, we'll develop methods to make sure you don't do this anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, you're probably not going to sleep at Jack's. You know, it's not.
They got hamburgers over there.
Yeah, not at 1 in the morning though. No. But there's, it's not as.
It's smaller and harder to find.
Yeah, and in the Baptist church, I don't know if they have people sleeping there. In the Greek church, I don't know if they have people there.
Now, do you intend to go, or do you know of any church leaders who intend to go tomorrow, amen, to the, what I call the shitty council, but they call themselves something else, who are, they're going to be looking at a proposal for money as well as a plan for 10 years to... I think they're, now they're calling it eventually end homelessness. They're getting a little more realistic in their monogram, their whatever.
Oh, really? No, no. I just know the smart solution proposals that they've been coming up with.
Which involves no emergency shelter funding whatsoever.
No. Right.
It's kind of a dumb approach to smart solutions, unless you want to maybe bump off all the homeless before you have to house them.
Right.
So I take it you're not planning to take off?
No,
or,
I won't.
Well, I mean, the fun of going to a city council meeting really can't be described.
Yeah, indescribable, unbelievable.
Unpalatable, indigestible, and so forth. But the food here is digestible, and I want to thank you for talking to me. Anything you want to add about upcoming events?
Easter. We're hoping for a resurrection.
We'll certainly get a lot of crucifixions. We'll see about a resurrection.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks. We're talking with?
Father Joel.
Thanks, Joel.
I need a blanket.
Okay. Well, they're up in the attic.
So we have a report. Your name, sir?
Saint X.
And Saint, what do you got to say?
It rained last night, and the bathrooms were closed, and it's another day with wet shoes on.
Thank you, Steve. And I mean, Saint Steve Wheelock is suing.
Dave is good too.
That's my favorite.
Really? Interesting. And we're talking with the Montauk for Free Radio.
I'm good.
Thank you very much.
Yep.
I could say that I did enjoy the rain last night, and yeah.
No hassles?
No, not really. Just stay warm-hearted, I guess.
And we're talking with?
Jacob.
Thank you, Jacob. All right. We're talking with... And you said you are chilling?
Yeah. Please don't harass me. Every now and then they write me a ticket, but they're very polite about it. But my major complaint is none of these restaurants use enough garlic in their food.
Well, there you are. Now, I was worried we wouldn't get a serious complaint. And we've been talking with
George Washington Jr. No, Bob Hutchinson Jr.
Thank you, Hutch.
Robert Nurse.
Yes, sir. That's me. So we're
May
talking.
3rd, Sunshine on the River, a benefit concert for foster and disabled children to go to camp. I'm opening up a sports and a music camp. Rocky Mountain Mamas. And I got a cancellation today at City Hall. Got here at 4 o'clock on the 17 Express. The Lord is good. So bring a baby under 18 and you get in free. If not, it's a $50 ticket.
Where is that?
It's at the San Lorenzo Park in Santa Cruz.
And what day again?
At Water and Ocean Street, May 3rd.
And what's the date?
It's a Sunday, May 3rd.
At what time?
11 to 9.
And we've been talking with?
Carolyn.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Yeah. All right. So last time I saw you, you were going to that, it's been a while, it was like a year ago, honey. Last time I saw you were going to that that speech of your...
Talking to a trestle man, what happened with you, sir?
I woke up under the trestle the other day, and the cops came over, they let like one person go and ticketed me and two other people.
Ticketed for?
Illegal camping under the trestle or trespass, I don't know. I don't even know. In the past couple days, my stuff got taken, so it doesn't really matter. Yeah.
So, how many tickets have you gotten so far while you've been here?
Probably about 7 or 8.
And have you been given any stay-away orders?
No. Yes, I've been given one stay-away order the entirety of me being here.
From where and how long was it?
The levee and day.
Okay, and when was that, more or less?
That was a couple months ago.
Okay. Anything else you want to report?
I don't think so right now. Don't think so. No.
And we've been talking with?
Actually, I do got something to report.
Okay.
Recently, down the beach, what they were doing was the police would come down with the paddy wagon and swoop everybody's stuff right off the front of the beach if they weren't sitting on it. Even if they were near their possessions, they would even go up as far as taking people's tent posts and breaking people's tent posts.
When did you see this happen?
I didn't see the tent post being broken, but I seen the paddy wagon come down and sweeping everybody's stuff. It was a couple weeks ago.
CPD?
Yeah. There was actually an officer I walked up to because I was like, wow, it's daytime. I can't be out on the beach with my stuff. You know, like, even if I did walk off the beach for a couple seconds, it doesn't matter. Like, I should be able to be, like, have my stuff on the beach like any other, like, tourist or something, you know? I mean, I was just utilizing the beach during the day, during normal hours. I couldn't understand why they would try to take people's stuff. Well, when I whipped out my phone and I asked the officer for his superior officer's number, he told me, fuck you, 911. And then when I whipped out the camera, he got in his car and pulled off as fast as he could. But Officer Rodriguez wasn't fast enough to hide his name tag.
Very interesting. Again, what time of day was this?
It was probably about morning to midday. Probably morning to midday. Probably between beans and rice or Jesus Christ and noon. So.
And we've been talking with?
James.
Thank you, James.
Thank you.
Looking better than usual.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Enjoy your meal.
Got someone trimming my beard.
Yeah, very good. Talking with
Lily Crafts. And I just wanted to say that I've been playing music on the streets, and I think that they don't get the recognition they deserve, really, out there. And that's pretty much all I have to say.
No tickets?
No tickets. No, I've been here for only a week and a half. I'm from Roseville, California. And they're a lot nicer here. Like, the cops are, at least, than Roseville, but cops suck anywhere, so. But it's their job.
And you are?
Oh, and I'm what?
You're Lily.
I'm Lily.
Thank you, Lily.
You're welcome.
You're lying. Talking with?
Rod Clam.
What you got?
I think the movie theater downtown is great, and hopefully they help start helping the homeless with some kind of donation and getting people off the street. Boy, thank you. God bless.
Thank you. We've been talking with?
Rod Clam.
Thanks, Rod. Any reports?
I think this place is great.
The Red Church.
At the Red Church and all the people gathering here.
Are you, is this your first time here?
This is my first time here.
Where are you from?
I'm from, well, I'm traveling, but I'm coming out of Northern California.
And we've been talking with?
Dan.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
We're talking with
Bumblebee.
And BB, what you got?
I love you.
Oh, there you have it, Bumblebee. Thank you. I mean, there we have it from you, Bumblebee. Where's my hug?
Right here.
Thank you, Bumblebee.
You're very welcome.
That was quite a hug. Any other reports? No? We have a man who's going to tell us what we need. Your name, sir?
We need to restock the KMFDM.
Which is?
Metropolis Records over here.
We'll let the audience think about that. And we've been talking with?
Om.
Thank you, Om.
Then I got picked up for sleeping on the sidewalk in front of some building at 6:30. Didn't get to the jailhouse until 8:30. Peed in the car and the sergeant didn't say nothing because I got congestive heart failure and I take pills that make me piss. I just had got out the jail, out the hospital 8 hours or less than 8 hours.
What day was it?
It was Thursday.
About a week ago.
The motherfuckers gave me a fake imitation dollar for my real dollar, kept my medicine, still have my clothes, and tried to give me a court date. Somebody tried to give me a court date of a, I don't have a lawyer. In other words, I don't get a lawyer. This is like my 100th contact with
dressed like police officers, and I haven't stolen anything.
How long in Santa Cruz?
Man, I've been here like, the last time you talked to me was, I've been about 10 days now.
Well, this is your welcome.
I got congestive heart failure. I had edema. I just got out the hospital. And this HR tells me I got a court date with no lawyer.
What do you charge
with? A white woman tell you you got no...
what do you charge with?
Right, doesn't that cover them so they don't get killed?
I can't tell you on that one, but what do you charge?
Yeah, it is.
What do you charge with?
Nothing really. I was sleeping. I was having a congestive heart failure moment. You know, on the street, I was given wrong medic. Well, I wasn't even totally wrong medication, but I was given medication that wasn't really up to standard.
Where were you sleeping on the?
I wasn't really sleeping. I was having.
Where were you lying down?
On the street.
Where were you resting?
I wasn't resting. No.
Where did you collapse on the street?
Perfect. Yeah, in front of across the street from Forever 18 or
21. Yeah, that's it. Well, my apologies for the police. No one can apologize for them.
In the morning, you talk to Johnny Cochran shit to a guy who lives under the poverty level in a state called Killer Cali.
And we've been talking with
Ed Williams from the. Evergreen State.
Thank you, Ed. Here's a man with a short haircut eating popcorn. Sir, you've changed your appearance since I saw you last.
Yeah, you got to do that sometimes.
And have you successfully evaded stay-away orders and shit of that sort?
Yep.
And are you ever playing an instrument on the street anymore?
Yeah, late night. After 10.
And can I identify who you are, or should we keep you a secret here?
Miguel de Leon.
All right. That's Lito, to those who may remember you by that name.
Mm-hmm.
Anything you've seen you want to pass on?
No, just free the people.
Thank you. Thank you. We have two words from a man who's reporting from the street.
It sucks.
Thank you, sir.
First and above all, for everything, give glory to God and praise God of Israel, my Father, forever.
All righty, and we've been talking with...
Archangel Michael, Brandon LeVay.
Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
We're talking with
Stevie Lee.
And you say the staff alive told you no, no, no.
I went in there for a sample and went to use the bathroom and they told me to get out.
And this was the staff alive up on Soquel?
Soquel, yeah.
And what time of day? How did it happen?
Probably about 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, something like that.
And have you been?
I didn't steal nothing or anything like that.
Have you been there before and used the bathroom before?
I try not to because I'm afraid I might get kicked out of there, but the way I look.
And have you had that experience anywhere else recently?
Yeah, every place I go, I get that. I have the look that generates...
the prejudice? The paranoia? The fear?
The fear and the paranoia of the way a man looks.
So name a couple other places that you recently have found have been problematic for you.
Let's see.
Any places on Pacific Avenue, for instance?
Maybe a couple places. I can't.
If you do, let me know. It's all right.
Okay, I try to stay away from there. But
anything else? Any hassles for ticketing, for sleeping?
No ticketing. Maybe sleeping it was up on High Street. A church.
Well, thank you.
And who's that over there sleeping? I said, I'm a child of God. God's children. He goes, you got to get out of here before I call the cops.
And we've been talking with?
Stevie Lee.
Thank you, Stevie Lee. Right. Should be on free radio on Thursday.
Yeah, I got one.
So we're talking with Honey. Hi, Honey.
Yes, it's Honey live again in Santa Cruz. Dig this one, I found out. Now, as far as getting camping and sleeping tickets, when you get a ticket, do you know they give you a 24-hour stay away? So if you get a ticket, any ticket, smoking, standing, walking, you got to stay away from wherever they give you a ticket for 24.
When's the last time you got such a good stay away?
Oh, I don't know, about a week or so. Yeah, about that. It don't matter because... Yeah, it don't matter. Anyway, dig, this is what I found out today. And look, let them go. This is really important.
Looks like about 7 or 8 people in line, and they've run out of food.
No, okay. Yeah. Let me get something. We got to talk because this is very important.
Thank you, honey.
You know, sleeping
we'll hear about
costs
that.
$157.
That's what I hear. Yeah.
Did you have to pay $35 and do $60 worth of community service?
Sucks.
For sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah. Hold it. Talking with.
No, you don't want this. And I got home finally and I slept and I got all my shit stolen.
Well, that's. Yeah. Sorry to hear it.
No, welcome.
Talking with.
Margie.
And Margie, you're saying the weather is not as bad as it could be?
Sure. It could always be worse, but we'll take the heat. Let's bring on the heat.
You're going to bring on the heat. You're going to get the heat whether you like it or not, lady.
The sun. Sun. I'm ready to tan. I'm ready to wear flip-flops.
And no tickets at the moment?
No tickets, no.
Any reports, sir, from you?
None. Nope. She pretty much summed it up.
And we've been talking with?
All is good. Margie Jenkins.
And with?
Santos.
Thank you both.
Block the bully.
So we have a hassle survivor. What's your name? Or if you want to say, you don't have to.
I have bullies, and I think it's wrong.
How often does that happen?
Every day.
And what's your response? How do you deal with that kind of stuff?
Run.
And are you becoming a good runner? Are you getting faster? Or are you getting slower and more tired?
I know how to skirt, swerve, and swerve. Skirt, swerve, and swerve. So yeah.
And what about legal places to sleep? You got any place you can go to sleep without getting fucked with?
I sneak here to the Red Church.
Does that work pretty well?
So far, so good.
Yes. No hassles, no tickets.
Unless you tell somebody where I'm sleeping, then.
Well, there are 20 people sleeping here every night. That's what I hear.
I'm good.
All right,
thank you.
This goes out on free radio if that's okay with you.
You're fine.
And do you want to say who you are?
No.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
No problem.
And that was the Monday that was at the Red Church. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. We're about to sign off and seg you into From the Cream to the Dregs. And I want to do a report, maybe I will on Sunday, about the crackdown on cannabis, medical marijuana, that the Board of Supervisors has initiated or passed on Tuesday, and maybe doing that. Also, the right to rest law, which will be coming up in Sacramento for a vote very shortly in April. People are interested in being a part of that. Give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, particularly if you want to give out emails and you want to email the Senate Judiciary Committee members. This is the state Senate Judiciary Committee members in Sacramento, or the state, I think it's Housing and Transportation Committee. Unless the bill can come out of one of those committees, the right to rest law, which throws out local laws again that criminalize sleeping. It's a way of eliminating sleeping bans all over the state, and it has about as much chance of passing as a snowball does of surviving in a very hot climate. But it's still a worthy goal, a good organizing tool, and something that some people in the state Senate are supporting. So you might want to check into that. Call me at 423-HUFF, and I'll give you more information about how to get online and send an email supporting this and asking it to come out of committee. So, that really kind of sums it up for today. I'm going to go out on some of the music of Carol Denny, who sometimes it's a little hard for me to catch her lyrics, but since she brings a copy of them to her CD, I can always read them. Unfortunately, you may not be able to hear them all, but let's hear this number. There's serious money in Doomsday.
My brother, he tries to sell Bibles. My sister is peddling sin. My parents are gonna sell Doomsday, 'cause it happens again and again. My uncle sells timeshares in Maui. guaranteed weight loss through drinking. My God, how the money rolls in. My God, how the money rolls in. My God, how the money rolls in. There's serious money in doomsday. My God, how the money rolls in. The Tea Party hats sell like hotcakes. Confederate flags round the clock. It used to be just reenactors, but now we can't keep them in stock. The end of the world is upon us. Let the preachers and lawyers begin. Preparing to die takes some planning. My God, how the money